I'm Nathan Rutherford, and welcome to Myth Madness. In the previous two episodes, I covered the myth surrounding the Greek hero Perseus. In part one, I talked about how Perseus secured help from the gods and was able to track down and kill one of the monstrous Gorgons. This adventure started as a way for Perseus to save his mother from an unwanted relationship with a cruel king. It is Perseus's most famous adventure, and the climax took place far from his home. In part two, I talked about Perseus's adventures on his return journey and what he did when he got back to Greece. The focus of this episode is the Gorgon Perseus killed two episodes back. In that story, Medusa was presented as a threatening monster. In this episode, I want to take time to drill down a bit more into the mythology of the Gorgon Medusa and how conceptions of the Gorgons changed over time. First off, let's start with her family. Early Greek writers and artists portray Medusa as a monster born into a large family of strange, sea-related, but not exactly, monsters. Medusa's parents are almost always Phorkys and Keto. Sometimes only Phorkys is named. The name Phorkys means seal, while Keto means whale or sea monster. Hesiod lists their children as the Graiae, the Gorgons, Typhon's monster partner Echidna, and Ladon, a multi-headed serpent monster. Later writers usually just refer to the Graiae and the Gorgons. Sometimes a sea monster called Scylla is added. Going earlier than Hesiod, there is Homer, who provides the name of a daughter named Thusa. She became a lover of Poseidon. Homer describes Phorkys as an old man of the sea. Both he and Ceto were the children of Gaia, the Earth Mother, and her second partner, Pontus, the sea. While Phorkys and Keto are the parents of Medusa and the Gorgons in most sources, the Roman poet Hyginus provides a different father. He names somebody named Gorgo, or Gorgon. It is clear from his text that Gorgo and Phorkys are not the same person, the reason being Hyginus first lists the various children of Phorkys and Keto, and then contrasts this list with the children of Gorgon and Keto. So who was this Gorgon or Gorgo? Well, Hyginus names him as a child of the monster Typhon and his serpentine partner Echidna. They are the father and mother of a lot of monsters from Greek mythology. Back in the Typhon episode, I talked about how the four main children of Typhon and Echidna were the Chimera, the Hydra, the hellhound Cerberus, and another dog named Orthus. But I also mentioned that over time, the ancient Greeks added more and more monsters to this list. Hyginus here is adding yet another, this Gorgo, and thus, through him, Typhon is also the ancestor of Medusa and the Gorgons in this version. Hyginus has more to say about Gorgo, but none of it is really clear. He refers to someone named Aix, and this may be the same as Gorgo or someone different. If Aix and Gorgo are the same, this is a being with an undetermined gender. They're described as having a beard, but also other female features. This Aix is a child of Helios, had a beautiful body but a hideous face, and was born in the early times when the Titans still ruled the universe. The Titans thought Aix was so ugly, they asked Gaia to hide her away in a cave. This was on Crete, and Aix eventually became a nurse of Zeus when the baby boy was smuggled there. But Zeus later used her head to decorate his goatskin Aegis. So that gives us one or two possible Gorgons. A possible male Gorgon, who is the father of Medusa, and another one named Aix, who seems to have more female attributes. But both are only directly mentioned by Hyginus, at the tail end of ancient Greek history. But how many Gorgons were there supposed to be? Well, the number goes back and forth over the course of Greek history. Homer is the earliest source that mentions a Gorgon in some way. Both Homer's Iliad and Odyssey only refer to one Gorgon. He or she is not named. In the Odyssey, the Gorgon is listed as one of the frightful inhabitants of the underworld, and the Iliad says the head of the Gorgon is on the Aegis of Athena. This is the same Aegis that belongs to Zeus. Athena just borrows it. Even though Homer only mentions one Gorgon, that doesn't mean he only thought there was one Gorgon. We can't be sure. His details on the Gorgon story are pretty slim. But assuming he did only think there was one, it's also not clear if Homer's Gorgon is the same as Hyginus' Gorgon, or one of the usual kind we're familiar with. Both supposedly had their heads decorate Zeus's Aegis, although they got there in different ways. Besides Homer and Hyginus, most of the time we have the typical three Gorgon sisters. Hesiod is the earliest known Greek author who actually lists multiple Gorgons. He even gives the names of the three Gorgons, as Steno, meaning strong, Euryale, possibly meaning wide-stepping or of the sea, and Medusa, which comes from the word Medion, meaning guardian or even queen. All three are named as the daughters of Phorkys. There's no mention of a male Gorgon or Aix by Hesiod. Several hundred years later, Apollodorus does the same as Hesiod, naming three Gorgons, who are all sisters and all the daughters of Phorkys. Taking both these early and late sources into account, it seems the dominant tradition in ancient Greece was that there were three female Gorgons. However, right in between them, in the classical period, there is Euripides. In one of his plays, Euripides only refers to a Gorgon, and he doesn't give a name for it. He doesn't say there are any others. This could mean there was some flux going on in the traditions of Gorgons in the archaic and classical periods, before Hesiod's three Gorgon idea became the main referred one. However, like with Homer, Euripides is also being a bit vague here. He never comes right out and says there is only one. He may very well have thought that there were multiple Gorgons, but for his purposes, he maybe was only interested in mentioning the Gorgon, as in the main Gorgon, Medusa, the one killed by Perseus. As it happens, another classical period person, Pindar, does refer to Gorgon sisters, and Aeschylus, another playwright living around the same time as Euripides, also says that there were three. So, the number of Gorgons remains fairly consistent, although there are some Greeks who might have thought there was only one, but we can't say for sure. But only one of them really does anything in the surviving myths anyway. So what were these Gorgons like? Here's where we start to see some dramatic differences in the different sources. Let's go back to the 8th century BC. Homer quickly describes his Gorgon's head in various places. Once, saying the head of the grim, gigantic Gorgon was a thing of fear and horror. He calls the Gorgon fierce, grim, and blank-eyed, which makes me think of the kind of dead-looking, forward-staring eyes people use to describe sharks. The Gorgon's eyes are important to Homer. He even compares one hero's eyes as glaring, like those of the Gorgon. Homer never tells us why the Gorgon is like this, but his basic descriptions make it clear he's talking about some kind of monster. A little bit later, in the 8th century, we have Hesiod. While he tells us the number of Gorgons and their names and says how Perseus killed Medusa, he doesn't provide a lot of descriptive information for them. Hesiod does say one thing that really jumps out, though. He says Medusa was mortal, but that the other two were immortal and ageless. The question is, why is Medusa different? Is she different in other ways? Mortal in other ways? Is she perhaps humanoid in other ways? I'll come back to this in a moment, but let's not get hasty, though. Note this. Hesiod does not say Medusa started out as mortal, as in she once was human. He only says that she was mortal in comparison to her sisters, who were immortal and ageless. Hesiod is using mortal here to say that Medusa could die, and that's the reason Perseus killed her and not one of the other Gorgons. There's no mention of Medusa being human. In fact, Since Hesiod describes her clearly non-human parents and siblings, he implies that Medusa was non-human too, and likely a monster. And at least one contemporary of Hesiod thought just that. Somewhere in the 8th or 7th century BC, an unknown Greek bard wrote an epic poem called the Cypria. The complete poem is lost, and we don't know the author, but it was likely written as a kind of prequel to Homer's Iliad. It told how the Trojan War began, but like with the other archaic age Greek poets, it included a lot of extra details on other Greek myths. We know from one of the surviving fragments that in the Cypria poem, the Gorgons were considered fearful monsters. In ancient Greek literature, we have to wait until the 5th century BC, at the beginning of the classical period, before we get some really clear descriptions of the Gorgons being monsters. The poet Pindar says they have snake heads. The playwright Aeschylus is even more detailed. He says the Gorgons had wings and snake hair, that they were hated by mankind, because they were scary monsters. And Aeschylus says no one of mortal kind shall look upon them and still draw breath. In this way, Aeschylus also shares Homer's emphasis on Gorgons being fierce, grim, and things of fear and horror. At the same time, Euripides provides a few different details. He says the horrid Gorgon was snake-haired, but also that she was born out of the ground, and that drops of her blood were either a terrible poison or had healing powers. Those are all literary descriptions of Gorgons from archaic and classical Greece. On this pod, when I can, I like to point out what is shown in Greek art, usually on their decorated pots and vases. So, how do the Gorgons appear when they are painted? You can find several examples on the internet, sourced from collections in various museums around the world. There are a lot from the 5th and 6th centuries BC, so around the time of Pindar, Aeschylus, and Euripides. In almost all the examples I've seen, when Medusa or a Gorgon's full body is shown, they have big feathery wings. Their other key features are big staring eyes, a wide mouth, sometimes with fangs protruding over the top and bottom lips, and a long tongue, lolling outwards like a panting dog. Interestingly, the snake hair, which you might think is a Gorgon's telltale sign, is not clear in every example. To be fair, most of them do have snake hair, but in some, their hair just looks curly. Some of the Gorgons also have beards. These ones seem to have more masculine features overall. Maybe this is where Hyginus got the male Gorgon idea. Returning to literature, let's look at the works a few hundred years later. While Aeschylus said no mortal could look at the Gorgons and survive, Lycophron, in the 3rd century BC, is the first surviving source to elaborate on exactly how Medusa kills people who look at her, by turning them into stone. He says using the severed Gorgon's head, Perseus could fashion men as statues, from top to toe. A couple hundred years after him, the Roman poet Ovid lived from 43 BC to 18 AD. In his poems, The Metamorphoses and The Heroides, he describes Medusa's snake hair in several places, and also how she could turn people to stone. Ovid has some other very interesting things to say about Medusa's background, but I'll come back to that in a few minutes. After Ovid, in the 2nd century AD, Apollodorus's very detailed description of Gorgons is the most straightforward. He says the Gorgons' heads were entwined with the horny scales of serpents, and they had big tusks like hogs, bronze hands, and wings of gold on which they flew. All who looked at them were turned to stone. Although somewhere else in his writing he describes how if a lock of Gorgon hair was held up on the walls of a city under siege, the enemy army would run away in terror. Apollodorus takes everything others have already explained about the Gorgons and brings it all together. We have the wings, we have the snake hair, we have the tusks or fangs coming out of the Gorgons' mouths. We have a new detail about bronze hands or claws. Polydorus follows the written sources and the artwork, too. Okay, so now we've talked about the Gorgon's monstrous characteristics. In the early archaic years, in literature, we get a vague description of a monster. A grim, fierce monster with staring eyes. Something scary to look at. We have to look at the Greek vases or wait until the early classical period literature to get the specific details. But within the archaic period, we also have Hesiod. And a few moments ago I mentioned how he is the one that first shares the unique detail of the Gorgon Medusa being mortal. I suggested that this does not mean Medusa was any less monstrous, but instead was used by Hesiod to explain why, out of the three Gorgon sisters, Medusa was the one that Perseus killed. But there is more to Hesiod's version that suggests Medusa was special in other ways, too. First off, there is a comment that Medusa suffered a sad fate, before going on to explain what happened when Perseus cut off Medusa's head. At this point in Greek history, there is only evidence the Greeks viewed the Gorgons as monsters. They're described as scary. Homer even has the hero Odysseus scared of finding a dead Gorgon when he visits the land of the dead. Imagine just how fierce, grim, and terrible these archaic Greeks imagined Gorgons to be, if they thought they were terrible even when they were dead. But Hesiod's sad fate comment suggests empathy on the part of the poet. Why would Hesiod feel bad if Medusa was just another terrible monster? What if Medusa was less monster and more woman? Towards the end of the 5th century BC and the beginning of the 4th, in the late classical period, we begin to see a change in how Medusa was drawn on Greek vases. In one example, Medusa does not look like any of the earlier Gorgon art. This Medusa looks very, very different. She does not possess any of the monstrous Gorgon features. No snake hair, no wide mouth and protruding tongue, no fangs, and certainly no beard. Instead, she is a beautiful woman with curly hair and a dress. She looks human, except for having large, feathery wings. In another example, we have another winged woman. In these two examples, Medusa is not a fierce, vicious creature. Instead, she is shown peacefully asleep with her head resting on folded hands. But if this Medusa looks so different, how do we even know it's Medusa? In some examples of Greek vase art, the figures are sometimes labeled. It's pretty easy to tell who people are when that happens. But that doesn't always happen, so we have to rely on the context of the image. Try and figure out what's being depicted by looking at other things in the picture. One of these vases, with the beautiful winged woman, shows Perseus pulling the woman by the hair, as the goddess Athena observes. In the image, Perseus's head is turned the other way, because she is a Gorgon and he can't look at her, even though she is not fierce and grim and dangerous looking like the earlier Gorgon artwork. This, in itself, is interesting. Today, people normally interpret the whole can't look at a Gorgon thing as meaning the monsters are so ugly, looking at them turns you to stone. But this doesn't hold here. The winged woman on the vase is clearly not ugly, so why does Perseus still look away? Well, having the head turned away is likely just an artistic convention, something artists would put in their work so viewers could identify the people in them. The ancient Greek who painted this vase wanted the people he painted it for to know who it was, and they used the convention to identify Medusa in the same way we can today. Both of these examples of a beautiful Medusa come from the Attica region of central Greece, the area around the city of Athens. Both were made around 450 BC, but likely by different artists. This suggests this new, more human-looking conception of Medusa may have started as a very regional tradition in the late classical period. It may have spread fairly quickly, though. Less than 100 years later, in the 4th century BC, a vase was made in Apulia, in southern Italy. It shows Perseus with an Athena holding Medusa's head, but the head is a simple human female head with some snakes in the hair. There's none of the more monstrous qualities shared by the archaic artistic depictions of Gorgon heads. No staring eyes, big mouth, or long tongue. Although this Medusa does have the snake hair, so she is at least slightly more monstrous than the Athenian vases. Later on, Roman-era mosaics show this slightly more human Medusa. She basically just has a human head with some snakes sticking out of her hair. What we have here is a gradual humanizing of Medusa the Gorgon over the course of Greek history. With the available artistic evidence, we can guess this happened at the end of the 5th century BC, and possibly saw its most radical form around Athens. Afterwards, Medusa art kept a more human appearance, but the snake hair remained her main identifying characteristic, unlike the staring eyes and big tongue, which were her key features in earlier centuries. But why did this humanization of Medusa happen? It could be that the earlier Gorgon monster art just fell out of popularity. In the archaic period art, the Gorgons do look like something that just stepped out of someone's nightmare. Maybe the later Greeks just wanted more human, less nightmarish representations overall. But I think it's possible that this more human-looking Medusa was tapping into a new and growing myth tradition about her. In the 5th century literature, Pindar describes Medusa as being fair-cheeked while also describing her snake hair. This could be his own interpretation or part of a wider tradition. It might also be possible that this tradition grew out of whatever tradition Hesiod was tapping into when he shared his details about Medusa's background. So, what does Hesiod say about Medusa besides her being a daughter of Phorkys, one of three Gorgon sisters, that she was mortal, and was killed by Perseus? In his brief telling, Hesiod also says, "Poseidon, he of the dark hair, lay with her in a soft meadow and among spring flowers." The phrase "lay with her" here means sex, and it means sex in the most general way possible. But is this consensual sex between two lovers, or is this a rape? Hesiod is not clear. Some people read this and infer from the context that it's a romantic affair, because lying together in soft grass surrounded by sweet-smelling flowers does sound romantic to us today. And that's a fair point, but having a romantic-sounding setting doesn't always mean a romantic time. Myths from other cultures, but Greek mythology too, are full of examples of young girls innocently picking flowers in fields or sitting by the edge of a river before being jumped and raped by some stranger. My point is this. In Hesiod's version, Medusa and Poseidon have sex, but we don't know enough context to determine what the circumstances were. Hesiod's version is from the 8th or 7th century BC. Around 800 years later, we get Ovid, and his version is much more transparent than Hesiod, and provides a very different take. First off, Ovid shares that Medusa was one of multiple Gorgon sisters, but there's a major twist. Only Medusa has snake hair, and presumably looks like how we imagine Gorgons to be. Why was Medusa the snake-haired one? In Ovid's poem Metamorphoses, this question is asked by the Ethiopians, to none other than Perseus, fresh from his slaying of Medusa herself. It's a tragic tale. Perseus tells the Ethiopians, "Medusa was once extremely beautiful. Tales of her went far and wide, and many suitors hoped to attend her. Her best feature, apparently, was her hair. One day, Medusa was in a temple dedicated to Athena. Why she was in this temple? Was she a priestess? A worshipper praying to Athena? Or perhaps even hiding inside, is not clear. Ovid just tells us she was in a temple. Within, we are told, Poseidon, the lord of the sea, raped Medusa. Since it's Athena's temple, she saw the whole thing, but turned away and used her shield to block her eyes. Later, Athena punished Medusa, turning her lovely hair into the loathsome snakes." Yes, you heard that right. Athena punished Medusa for being raped. Punished her for something she had no control over. People today are rightly disturbed to hear this detail, and often ask why. Maybe Athena couldn't punish Poseidon, so she settled for Medusa. Maybe Athena blamed Medusa. Maybe people in ancient Greece and Rome had a boys-will-be-boys attitude and generally blamed women when terrible things happened to them. This background story for Medusa includes a sexual relationship with Poseidon, like with Hesiod's, but in this one it is clearly a rape. Ovid is also the earliest surviving source that puts Athena in the middle of it. Previously, Athena is only involved in the death of Medusa, not in her origins. In Ovid's tale, Medusa and her sisters are beautiful women. Like with the earlier stories, Medusa is different in some way. In Hesiod's tale, Medusa is mortal. In Ovid's, Medusa is monstrous. Hesiod explains his difference by tying it to why Medusa had to die. Ovid explains his difference in the same way, but also says Medusa wasn't always a monster and further explains how she got that way. There's no need for Athena to be involved in the earlier stories because in those, Medusa's monstrous gorgon qualities are innate, and that's just the way she is. Approximately 200 years after Ovid, Apollodorus wrote his Bibliotheca, the library. The two previous episodes covered Perseus's adventures, and Apollodorus provides the fullest account of them from start to finish, which I used as a basis for my retelling. Apollodorus was likely in some way familiar with the myth traditions involving Athena punishing Medusa. For in the library, Apollodorus includes this interesting line. It is affirmed by some that Medusa was beheaded because of Athena, for they say the Gorgon had been willing to be compared with Athena in beauty. Apollodorus seems to be referring, at least in part, to ideas of Medusa not being a monster, and instead a woman, especially a beautiful one, since why would Medusa have herself compared to Athena if she was a monster the whole time? In this version, at least, Medusa is being punished because she exhibits the flaw characteristic of many Greek heroes, hubris. Hubris in thinking she could be an equal to one of the goddesses. As you've heard, in ancient times, the interpretations of the Gorgons vary widely, but you can get an idea of how they might have developed over time, and what remained the same. In the earliest recordings, the Gorgons are monstrous, terrible creatures. The word Gorgon is even derived from the Greek word meaning grim. There may be multiple Gorgon sisters. There may be only one, or just one among them that is referred to as Gorgon. In the Archaic period, the Gorgons appear very inhuman, with big staring eyes, fangs or tusks, and long tongues, and oftentimes snake hair. Later on, the snake hair became the more dominant trait, and Medusa herself acquired a more human woman appearance. In Hesiod's account, she is linked sexually to Poseidon, which is also interesting because Homer mentions a sister of the Gorgons, Thusa, who was also linked sexually to Poseidon. Athena is also closely associated with Medusa in the Archaic period, as she helps Perseus and is often shown with the Gorgon head on her chest. In later sources, we get the details that Medusa fell afoul of Athena in some way, and that this tradition seems to take something from the humanization of Medusa that took place in previous centuries. Medusa is a monster, but she's not a monster on the scale of Typhon, the Chimera, or others. In the earliest sources, she always had something weird about her, either making her different from her sisters or from other mythical Greek monsters. And that's all for today. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider reviewing the podcast on Apple Podcasts. As always, thank you for listening.